Hello, this is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM on your radio dial. And for you digital cowboys and cowgirls, our website is kptz.org. There you can listen to both today's show, and you can also sample some of our earlier shows as podcasts. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as podcasts. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show, as well as some of the earlier ones. I'm Maryam McNellis. This show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who are the guys crawling around under the big tent around the commander's quarters at Fort Worden? Who's the woman at the post office who's mailing over 100 boxes wrapped in identical brown paper? What's inside those packages, and why are there so many of them? And who are the skateboarders down at the skate park? Shouldn't they be in school this time of year? This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with the people who make up the eclectic mix around here. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and teenage beauty queens, lawyers and ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County, amid the deer, the otters, and even the soaring eagles. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people, your neighbors, your friends, and particularly the people you don't know yet, but you'd like to meet them. My guest today is someone who's quite prominent around town, and if you haven't already met her, you're in for a real treat. My guest today is Port Townsend's mayor, Deborah Stinson. Welcome to the show, Madam Mayor. So let's start at the beginning. Are you a Port Townsend native?
No, ma'am, I'm not. I was actually born and raised in Colorado.
Colorado. Mm-hmm. Okay. And did you live there from day one all the way through to when you went to university? What happened?
No, I lived there until I was nine. Uh-huh. And then my dad's career shifted and we started moving about every 18 to 24 months to follow my dad's career. He was with a company that believed promotions needed to happen in other branches. So we moved around quite a bit.
Wow. What field was he in?
Trucking.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so what were some of the places you moved to?
Well, we first moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico, which was really quite a shift from our little burg there in Colorado.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah, and then from there, let's see, we went to California, several places around Southern California. We made stops in Utah and then Oklahoma.
Okay, and where did you go to high school?
High school was in Oklahoma, and that was an interesting adventure. We moved there. We got word we were moving again the first day of school when I was in the 10th grade.
Mm. That can be traumatic for teenagers to move.
It's 11th grade, yeah. Yes, it is. But by then, we were kind of experienced at it.
Yeah.
And it was an education in its own right.
So the first day of school, when you showed up at this new school, did you fit right in, or were you wearing the wrong socks or something like that?
I was wearing the wrong outfit. The school had recently implemented a very strict dress code, but I just moved there and I was wearing the clothing of the day, being the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s. I was wearing bell bottoms and t-shirts, and my bell bottoms were technically hip huggers. To fill up my schedule, they put me in the vice principal's office working in there because there wasn't a class that suited my needs. And so I was the one having to send everybody home for being dressed inappropriately, and here I was dressed inappropriately, but I had no other clothes. So it was kind of an interesting welcome.
So I'm just trying to imagine this scenario. You showed up, your mom or someone dropped you off at school, I presume.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And you only had the outfit you had on.
Right.
And you didn't know about this.
Right.
So what'd you do?
I just talked to them about it. I said, you know, my situation is such that it's going to take time to build a new wardrobe. I can't do this day one.
Yeah.
And they agreed, and they said, that's fine, but this is your job.
And so what was their dress code? What did they want you to wear?
Mom jeans.
Well, that must have been a rude awakening. What about in terms of classes? Were the classes things you were interested in?
It was pretty fascinating moving around, going from schools to schools. We would find that I was either moving into something that I'd missed something the previous semester because it was being taught in the opposite order where I had come from, or I was repeating what I'd already learned. When I got there, I was doing an awful lot of repeating. It was pretty boring. Towards the end of that first year, I was a little concerned what I was going to do my senior year. I got to looking around, and the nice thing they had in Oklahoma, they had a really excellent vocational technical program that was kind of centrally located. I got to looking through the list there, and they had a computer science opportunity. And so I signed up for that, and that's what I did my senior year. I went to the VoTech the first half, and then I worked the second half on the job training.
Well, you know, that's really fascinating because going back to that era, computers were not trendy. I mean, it was sort of a really nerd thing. It was sort of like doing audio visual, set up the projector kind of thing.
It was.
And yet, you were on the leading edge of something.
We moved to Oklahoma from Salt Lake, and in my math class in Salt Lake, we got to play with what was then called a desktop computer. It basically filled up the whole corner of the room.
Yeah.
And it was kind of fun. And that's when I looked down the list of options. I thought, well, that was kind of fun. I'll go do that. It was interesting. But as it turned out, it was pretty nerdy, and I was only one of a few girls because it really was more male-dominated. It was really, I enjoyed it a lot. It was a good school. Everybody wanted to be there. They wanted to learn. They were really engaged. And so it was a lot different.
So what were your first projects? What were you doing?
I mean, technically?
Yeah. Yeah. What was, I mean, we're talking about sort of the early computer days.
Yeah. This is back in the wired boards and key punch days.
Right.
So we had to learn all of the Hollerith code and how all that stuff worked. And you actually had to punch it into cards or wire these boards and then go put those in the computer and then punch these big lights on the panel to start the computer up. And yeah, it was
very different. Think for some of our listeners, it'd be hard to imagine this, but some of these early computers they're not little tiny things.
No, they filled up a whole room. And I think most people know the things we carry in our pockets today filled up very large rooms at that point in time.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I went from that, and then my whole career just progressed with the progression of computers.
So you went into technology.
I did. Yeah, I started my career when I was still in high school and never looked back.
Well, what was your first job then, your first real job?
My first job started in high school at the Oklahoma Department of Corrections when the state mandated that every department shall computerize. And I was hired in as a key punch operator, but the agreement was I'd key punch part-time and program the other part, you know, so I could learn more about programming. And I worked with a programmer, and we had to travel all around the state to all the state institutions.
Wow.
And talk to the good old boys of the Oklahoma Department of Corrections.
So there you were, a teenage girl, traveling around talking to prison officials all over the state. That must have been amazing.
It was very interesting. It, like I say, it was an education in itself.
I think it would be.
It would be.
Well, how were you received, or did it vary quite a lot?
Well, it kind of depended. I mean, I worked in the planning and research department, so they were really glad to see this coming, and they were very receptive to the suggestions we were making. We started by just interviewing. How does the process work? What do we need to compute? You know, what information do you need? You know, so what outputs do you need so we can start designing the inputs and the processes? And planning and research was all over it. The wardens and folks like that, not so much. So it was kind of a forced situation. But we ended up designing an inmate intake system where we gathered all the data on the individuals and then built that into a tracking system. So as they moved from one institution to the other, they kind of keep up with them.
It's hard to imagine now, but records like that were kept on little pieces of paper, little cards,
right?
Index
That's right.
cards,
That's
is
right.
that what they used?
Yeah.
And so what you were really setting up is sort of the groundwork, the basic for...
Very early days, and we didn't even have our own computer. We had to share a computer with the Department of Highways. So I'd have to work evening hours because that was the only time we could get access to the computer.
Yeah. Not like everyone having a computer in their pocket or,
That's
or
right.
their purse
yeah.
or something
yeah.
like that. Yeah. Okay, so your first job then was helping to computerize the Oklahoma Department of Corrections.
That's right,
what next?
Let's see. From there, I actually went to the University of Oklahoma. And I was one of the few people on staff, the professional staff, one of two at the university who did not have a degree. But I wasn't even of college age yet.
Wow.
But I was on the professional staff, and I was out there working, and I worked there about 10 years. And you know, by the time I finished up there, I primarily focused on automating the registration system. So instead of registering for a class and coming back in a couple days to find out whether or not you got in, they were able to do it real time, you know, during the online processing. So I was going through that conversion, helping convert them from a batch process to an online process.
That's interesting. Then after your university days, what'd you do next?
Well, after that, by that point, I was married and had a son, and we had decided it was time to go back to Colorado.
You missed Colorado.
Yeah, really missed Colorado.
Yeah.
That was home. So we went back there, and I was recruited into a job at Colorado National Bank. And that was a real interesting job right in downtown Denver. And they were on the bleeding edge of the Visa system, which is the credit card system that we all know. Visa is not a company. It's a consortium, a process. It's not a company. There's no brick and mortar of Visa.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
And so there was a bunch of these banks that were getting together as, how can we do this ATM thing? The ATMs were all brand new.
Well,
so it was kind of figuring out how to program and network all these ATMs and plus all the regular banking business stuff that had to be computerized.
Well, you know, it's really intriguing. I mean, there you are. You're basically probably a pretty hot commodity because there weren't that many people who knew computers at that point. And you didn't have a degree or anything, but I guess you didn't need it because you had knowledge.
It was a real, you know, one of those little wrinkles in time. And I was just very fortunate to slide into that.
And so the bank, what did you end up doing for them?
Oh, a little bit of everything, mostly online processing and large networking and all of that. They really wanted me to get into security and banking. You know, they kind of wanted me to be a banker. And I wasn't into being a banker. I enjoyed computers and tinkering around with computers more than being a banker, an applications kind of person. So I made a shift to Security National Bank, which many people here would know. That was a Northwest bank. And there they had a business that provided outsourcing to a wide variety of businesses. So I did the same kind of work, online processing, networks.
Now, were you still in Denver at this point?
I was still in Denver.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it was really fun work there because it was so varied, and I learned a lot of different businesses. Mm-hmm. But then they got bought out by the Bank of America. Long story short, that didn't last long. I ended up at a little company called NetWise. And NetWise was a small business, about 40 people worldwide. We designed and supported software that allowed computers to talk to each other, computers of all different kinds. So from the tiniest little computer up to the great biggest computer and everything in between, they could all talk to each other in a transactional basis. And so it was a kind of unique little niche that we had.
A very important one, though, because at that point in time, nobody could talk to anyone.
That's right.
Right.
They were all in silos.
Yeah.
And all these businesses were merging, and they all had disparate systems, and they couldn't communicate. So they'd use our software to help them bridge these computer systems together.
Well, that sounds like a hot little company.
It was. It was fun. And it was hot enough to gain the attention of a large Northwest company who eventually bought them out.
Microsoft?
Yeah, it was Microsoft.
Okay. Yeah.
And they brought us out here. And so that's how I ended up in Washington.
So that's how you ended up in Washington State.
Yeah.
Okay, I presume the Seattle area was where you ended up.
Yes, the east side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What were your initial impressions of Washington State?
Oh, I loved it. It was funny, when the talk started going around the company that Microsoft was looking to buy, everybody's like, well, it's a people buy. They wouldn't take the company without the people. That's really what it was about. And they had to have a certain percentage of us to go. And they're like, it's never going to, we're not leaving Colorado. Everybody who's there loves it, kind of like everybody who's here loves being here. Uh-huh. Very strong sense of place. But they started recruiting and bringing us out and bringing our families out. Oh, this is pretty nice.
So you
of course,
opted,
they obviously, yeah.
You opted to come out west.
Yeah.
I see. What year was that?
That was 95, 96. And it was interesting to move cross-country with 20, 25 other families, you know, because we could all share stories of the process and where we ended up.
That's great.
And
how did you end up going from the Seattle area to beautiful Port Townsend?
Oh, well, we discovered Port Townsend pretty early on. Shortly after we got here, my husband was going to stay home for a while to help our son transition because, unlike me, who had a lot of experience moving around, he was in ninth grade. So it was a tough time after being in one school system for that long. But it was his choice. It was a family choice to come, but it was still tough. So my husband stayed home to help with that transition, which was wonderful. But they kind of went out on exploratories, and they're the ones discovered it first. Oh, we got a place for you. And sure enough, they did. We came back over on a camping trip. We love to camp.
So tell me your first impressions on that very first trip.
course, they kind of whetted my appetite,
yes,
you know, telling me all about it. Mm-hmm. But as soon as we came, you know, around up there on Sims Way and around the bend and over the hill and that wonderful view that we all love, you've got the harbor down there and the bay and the mountains and the city up on the hill. It was, you know, pretty amazing. And anyway, I was blown away. And then driving down Water Street and looking around, and just, it was pretty exciting. I could hardly wait to get out and walk around and be part of it.
Yes, yeah. Yes. You're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in jaw-droppingly beautiful Port Townsend, and those are words that I crib from my guest today, Mayor Deborah Stinson. She is just telling me about how she first came to Port Townsend, first as more or less a tourist. She was working over in the Seattle area. So, Mayor, how did you make then the transition from just being the tourist to see the mm-hmm, town to mm-hmm. coming here to live?
Well, it was interesting. About the same time that my company was making this decision to move out here, I called up my family, and my uh-huh. brother in California said, well, I can't believe this, because we just made the decision to move to that same area. He was going to go to the wooden boat school. He and his wife moved up here to Port Townsend directly, and so they were very familiar with the area. Of course, we moved up to the east side, and mm-hmm. then my parents were in Eureka, California, which is a Victorian seaport, but mm-hmm. much larger, but still mm-hmm. a Victorian seaport. So when it was time for them to come and be closer to family, we knew this was the place for them. They just fell in love with it like we did. So they came up. So I started coming over very regularly.
So who yeah. moved here first in your family?
In Port Townsend?
Yeah.
My brother.
Your
so
brother,
when
right.
I when I moved here, I was Al's sister for a long time.
Okay. So your brother and then your parents. And
right.
So did you retire from your job
I did.
Over there?
I did. I retired from my job and so we could move over here.
Okay.
We were just chomping at the bit.
Yeah, yeah. And so you arrive and you're enjoying it. And then how did you suddenly transition into being in public office? In your earlier life, you weren't in politics or public office or anything like that. You were a techie. Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what happened?
Definitely. Yeah. Well, yeah. What did happen? Well, it was kind of a process. The other thing I didn't tell you, that once I got out and started walking around and being involved in Port Townsend, the thing that really made me want to move here was that strong sense of community. I think a lot of people will acknowledge it's just palpable here. People are engaged. There's a strong sense of place. People really want to be here and want to contribute. And that's something I was looking for when I retired, because it wasn't something I had moving around as often as I did. So that's why I was here. And then when I first got here, it was mainly to help take care of the folks. And then when that kind of settled down, I started a little business. I wanted to do something totally different. Uh-huh. It was light manufacturing uh-huh. on a product I designed. I went to WSU's entrepreneur class, which is still an excellent class, now run through the EDC Team Jefferson for anybody who wants to start or expand a business. And that was great. Came up with a business plan and then just hunkered down in my office at home trying to make this thing happen. And I was a little discouraged because I was home, hunkered down, and not out in this community I wanted uh-huh. to be part of. Uh-huh. And then my neighbor invited me to this little meeting of some people that were talking about things that I'm interested in, community, environment, you know, things uh-huh. of that nature. That ended up becoming quite interesting to me, and they decided to form an organization, and then they asked me if I would help facilitate keeping this organization
and
moving
forward.
And so
what was the organization?
That was Local 2020, and that was, gosh, 10 years ago now.
Okay.
So I got very involved with Local 2020 and decided, let's put this little business on the shelf for a while. I was struggling with sourcing materials uh-huh. and actually with my design, getting all that done. I was just kind of stuck, uh-huh. and I was not doing what I wanted to do after all.
Well, so you weren't happy.
I wasn't all that. Yeah, it wasn't going to pan out like I'd thought. So yeah. I decided, let's put it on hold for a little while.
Right.
It's still on the shelf. I could still bring it back someday.
It could happen.
I was going to take a year off and do this Local 2020 thing, uh-huh. and 1 year turned into 5 or 6, and then got very involved with emergency management, emergency preparedness, and local investing, and other various projects. Through that work, people got to know me, and so when there was an open position on council, I was approached and asked, would I not please put my hat in the ring? And I'm, are you serious? You know, and I thought about it. I had about 2 weeks to think about it uh-huh. with the deadline coming up, and talked at length with my husband and my family, and had a couple of sleepless nights trying uh-huh. to figure this out uh-huh. and decided, well, when your community calls, you step forward. You know, that's what I want to do. I want to contribute. I want to pay back. And if this is the way my community thinks I can contribute, then I'm willing to give it a try.
And so when did you first run for office?
That was 2011, first starting in 2012.
Okay. Yeah. And the city council terms is
four years.
4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I re-upped in 2015 for 2016.
Now,
election.
Being mayor in this town is mm-hmm. not an elected position.
No.
Explain how it happens.
So the mayor is actually elected by the rest of the council. Everybody runs for city council.
Right.
And then every 2 years, and that's how often we have council elections, are staggered. Mm-hmm. Three get elected 1 year, four get elected the next 2 years. In January, the first meeting is to elect a mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mayor's job is to preside over the council and pretty much be the public face for
the
city.
Sort of like the queen.
Well, not quite. I won't go that far. But yes, there is a bright distinction between city council and mayor and our city manager. We have a mayor-manager form of government.
Exactly.
And so the council is very focused on policy, and so the mayor stays on the policy side, but is presiding officer for the council,
mm-hmm.
and then also the official representative for the council.
Okay. From your vantage point, what are some of the bigger issues confronting our community right now?
Well, I think the one that most people are really feeling and talking about a lot is the whole housing situation.
Yes.
We all know about the recession of 2008, the housing bubble that impacted the whole country. It impacted us as well in a different way, you know, but every community is a little different, but everybody got impacted. And the result for us is as we've come out of that, a lot of the homes that would normally, there would have been a nice smooth transition of homes being sold and new people buying them on kind of a regular trajectory of cost. What happened is everything fell out, so people held on to their homes that would normally sell them, and they put them on the rental market, which was good because there were a lot of people needing rentals. But then, as the market started to recover, all those homes came back on the market, so a lot of people lost their rental. You know, people that were renting are now out on the streets looking for rentals. There aren't as many places to rent now because these homes were, once they were above water again, were sold to new buyers, which is good, you know, but some of those homes actually were sold as second homes. So now some of those properties that would be housing families that were buying them or renting them are sitting empty. So that's one of the challenges we have. We also have I think everybody's talked about the whole short-term rental Airbnb type of challenge that's happening that we're having to address, and we are addressing that.
Yeah. So is it fair to say it's sort of in process right now?
Yes, very much in process. And the whole housing issue runs this whole the full spectrum. It's from, you know, how do we house the homeless, you know, all the way up the ladder to, you know, family living wage jobs not being able to find housing either. So we need to find housing for, they call it workforce housing, you know, where do the people that work here live? You know?
Yeah. I can see that that's really an issue. What, in terms of the health of the local economy, what do you think are the businesses that are keeping us together?
Oh, there's so many. You know, we do have a really pretty eclectic mix. Of course, we have, you know, our largest employers are like the hospital and the city and the county are large employers themselves. And those are all good jobs that provide benefits, which are good for keeping things like the hospital and the doctors employed. In town. And there's also the mill, which also makes a big contribution as far as employment and the economic drivers in this community. The maritime trades are very important. So we have all of that. And of course, retail and tourism.
Are there some growing new areas?
There is a lot that you don't see a lot of in the way of small manufacturing.
Yeah.
You know, and craftsmanship.
You were telling me the other day there's some new boat building
going on. Yes, we did. There's a new boat builder who came to town and brought about 30 jobs. And that's the right size business, you know, that we're looking for. If we can keep attracting businesses like that or building our own, like I say, we have a lot of great entrepreneurs who are starting their own businesses. They're quiet. They have 1 to 5 employees. You don't see them. They're not out there. A lot of them sell those things on the internet or you know, services that you don't see. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what's going on at Howard Street. What's the plan there?
We're real excited about that. That's the largest commercial property that's left within the city limit. And that's one that's been on the books for years. It's been in the vision for years. And we just broke ground and we're really excited about that. But what that is that we're going to be putting in all the infrastructure that's needed to make those properties up there shovel ready for new businesses that are either expanding here locally or moving here.
Explain the term shovel ready. What do you mean?
Well, shovel ready means that the road is there, the water is there, the electricity, the broadband, you know, all the utilities are there so that they don't have to bear the expense of doing that. And also one of the biggest things we were able to do is to do a community stormwater. So when they come on and build, they don't have to bear the expense of doing all the stormwater management, which is a big savings for businesses.
And so at this point, what specifically is going in there?
Well, the first one that we know about and that we can talk about is Mount Townsend Creamery. They're busting at the seams and ready to grow, and they've got a nice parcel up there, and they've got some plans to be moving in. And we're doing some work on that. We're looking at the zoning and doing an overlay, an official overlay. But pretty much, if you go up to the city's website, there is an economic study for that whole area. But the target is really what we call craft manufacturing, not arts and crafts. You know, it's like craftsmanship. So the cheese is a craft, right? Uh-huh. They're manufacturing this wonderful product here that is being enjoyed worldwide or nationally anyway. Uh-huh. And so they manufacture it in the back, but they have a little retail component out front.
Right.
And we have a lot of businesses here that could fit into that category that do real high quality manufacturing at a scale that fits in that footprint up there. They could have a small retail component, and some of them could even have housing upstairs. There's going to be a nice bicycle track through there and a little parkway. So it's going to be a very attractive area for people to work.
Yeah. Well, one criticism I've often heard about Port Townsend is the real shortage of apartment buildings.
Yes.
Is there any room for something like that up there?
There is, actually, it's north of there. Yeah, I think people are aware we just put in a new water treatment plant up in that same general area.
Right.
And when we did that, we were able, again, to pull through the utilities and the street and the infrastructure needed. It runs right adjacent to the property that's zoned for apartments.
Excellent.
So now it makes it a lot easier for a developer to come in and develop those apartments.
Well, that would be good.
It sure would. So if anybody knows any developers out there that want to
do apartments,
I think there's a ready market here.
Okay, well, all right. Well, on that note, we really are run out of time.
Oh,
I hate
dear.
To tell you this.
Yeah.
But before we close, I just want to ask you some last thing, which is basically, now you've lived here for a while. Mm-hmm. You're very obviously, as mayor, active in the community. What is your favorite thing about Port Townsend?
Beyond just the beauty and the natural environment and everything we have here, I have to say it's the people. It's just, I love the eclectic, engaged community we have here. It's just a lot of fun, and I've learned so much from so many people. I hope I contribute to that mix.
Well, you definitely do. I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. This is Mary Ann McNellis, the host of Our Town. My guest today has been our mayor, Deborah Stinson. And she's been talking about some of the ideas for Port Townsend, and if anyone wants to put up an apartment building, has she got a deal for you? No, really. But anyway, thank you so much. Meanwhile, listeners, keep listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Mary Ann McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.